So when I hand over, start fucking.
Hello.
Wait. How does that go? Yeah. At least you got the fuck ups out of the way early.
Oh, fuck. I stepped on the dog's bowl.
Well, that's new. There's a little pop-up on my side now that says Todd Struich has started recording. That
oh,
never
really?
Happened before. Yeah.
So it, okay.
A new feature. So they're going to start charging extra for that, I'm
probably.
Sure. All right. From the burning mazes of the Arizona desert to the slot machine-clad boardwalks of New Jersey, it's the Imaginarium with Scott and Todd. I'm Scott Colbert.
And I'm the horror nerd, Todd Struich.
And we are now in daylight savings time.
We are. And I feel like I'm saving a lot of daylight.
Which means I am now recording an hour earlier than what I had been when it was in daylight savings time. Simply because I love all of you people and couldn't imagine not recording.
So I know Arizona's weird. What are you now of what 3 hours behind us or two?
I am now 3 hours behind you.
So it's 9:08 a.m. for you.
Yes.
Okay. Yes, I gotcha. Fair
enough. Those who listened last week and heard me tell my story about my job and how even though Arizona does not have daylight savings time, we have to go by Eastern Standard Time because that's, you know, where the main office, you know, Department of State is. And so our phones shut off now at 7, although I'm still scheduled 3 to 8. So I have that extra hour where I'm doing absolutely nothing. Well, I could play Jeopardy or Family Feud. That's what they're doing between 7 and 8 is playing Jeopardy or Family Feud.
Yo, your tax dollars at work, ladies and gentlemen.
Exactly.
Oh, that's great.
And if you remember, I said, you know, exactly, tax dollars at work, but that they're going to end up having to change that because they're not going to want to lose all of that money. I mean, we've got something like 700 employees here. I don't know, well over 1,000 in Michigan. And another 900 at the new building that opened here in Tempe, actually. And so, of course, when I get into work yesterday, there's an email from scheduling saying that all of our schedules have been updated through May 5th. All right. So as soon as I saw that, I said, well, it's going to be 2 to 7 for me now. And sure enough, they decided to change it to get in line with Eastern Standard Time, but here's the thing about that email. It was a cut and paste job because it says, you know, we are changing the schedule, so it's updated through May 5th. If you see a schedule change after March 31st, ignore it. they couldn't even be bothered to change that.
That's government bureaucracy for you, my friend.
Right?
You know? Wow.
And you know, and everybody's getting all, you know, flippity over it. And I'm like, well, you know, you're still getting paid far more than what this job is worth. So just shut the fuck up and deal with it.
Right. So speaking of the time change, that people are nothing if not predictable. Like my social media blew up with people bitching about it. And I do agree that it's time to put an end to it and just leave the clocks where they are now permanently. Like, we're not an agrarian based economy anymore, you know, to where like the farmers need daylight, whatever, you know, was originally designed for. I don't really even care about that. I just want people to shut the fuck up about the hour of sleep. Like, it's one day. Go to bed an hour earlier. Like, really, are you just not an adult? Like, I am sleep deprived every goddamn night of my life, you know? So for me, oh, I'm only going to lose an hour? Sign me up, you know?
People between complain about anything.
Between backaches and pee breaks, I'm up 10 times a night anyway.
Well, exactly. I am too. And, you know, I had a guy call in, and he got his passport, and his birthday was, I think it was like March 12th, because he called on the day of his birthday, and he was, and it said February 12th. So he was livid about this, because I've got a trip coming up, and I send three different things with my birthday on it. How could you possibly get it right up the So, you know, I calm him down. I apologize. You know, nothing's infallible. You know, mistakes happen. And, you know, I get him the information on how to get the passport reissued. And, but I asked him, well, when is your trip? June. You know, and then he has the nerve to me. He says, is there a way to escalate this so we can find out who made that mistake and bring it to their attention? You know, in other words, get this person in trouble.
Right.
And I said, you know, the agency that, you know, our passport agencies, they don't have a way of, and I lied, because I'm not getting somebody in trouble over a bullshit, innocent mistake.
Right.
You know, I don't play that game.
Yeah, it's, we're humans. It happens.
Yeah.
You know?
We have fat fingers. I make mistakes from time to time. So I just said, you know, there's not a way of doing that, because the cult, you know, the passport agencies that do the processing are huge, and there's simply not a way to track it down, other than to which agency did it. In his case, I think it was the New York agency. And he grumbled about that. I can't believe them. Yeah. Is there anything else I can help you with? No. Have a nice day, click.
That's probably the kind of person who, you know, when they get pulled over for speeding, says to the cop, you know, I pay your salary, right? Like, okay.
Yeah.
Keep that in mind when I'm beating you with this nightstick.
And there's an addendum to that story that I can't tell on the air. I'll tell you after we stop recording.
Excellent.
All right. So enough work bullshit. We've wasted enough time on that. Eric Carmen.
Yeah.
Passed away.
Yeah, man. And I had really forgotten how many big hits he had.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? All By Myself, Hungry Eyes, Make Me Lose Control. Like, holy shit, you know? And even, and then it reminded me, because my daughter was in Footloose, the musical. He co-wrote Almost Paradise, which is the big love theme from Footloose.
Yeah.
And he wrote a song for the 1988 Summer Olympics as well. I was reading his Wikipedia page. I was like, holy shit. I actually saw him. I never saw him alone in concert. But one year he was with on tour with Ringo Starr and his all-star band. So that was pretty cool. So I did get to see Eric Carmen and hear a bunch of those songs live and stuff. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, that is cool. He was... let's see, how old was he? Let me take a look.
74.
74. So, that's that age. Not young, but not what we would consider old either. Which is
no, not at all. It's sort of in that weird spot, you know, because my dad's going to be 78 this year, you know, so I don't think of 70s as old, but still, it's pretty good. It's pretty good if you hit 70, you know.
Yeah,
you've done okay.
Yeah, you know, he had a good life. I'm assuming, you know, prolific songwriter and singer, and that was 2000 that you saw him in Ringo Starr, because
yeah,
that's the year that he was in it.
Yeah,
2000.
It was a long time ago, but I went to a bunch of those Ringo Starr concerts. I always enjoyed it because he always got together like a pretty cool group of musicians that you wouldn't might not have seen otherwise. You know, it was always like in a sort of an eclectic lineup, you know.
Yeah, and they just look like they're a lot of fun.
They were.
I think he's got one going out again this year, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, and I meant to go check to see who's touring with him, and if only there was a way to find that out. Ringo Starr and his little star band. Who is he touring with this year? RingoStarr.com. Bum, 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 bum. Steve Lukather, Edgar Winter again. Okay, I saw Edgar with him. Colin Hay, I've seen. Warren Ham, Hamish Stewart, and Greg Bissonette. So it's a pretty familiar lineup. He's toured with all these people before. But it
looks because the others keep Vegas. Dying.
Yeah. It looks like I'm going to have to go to Vegas to see if I want to.
Yeah. At this point, Ringo doesn't say, who can I get? He's saying, who's still alive?
Pretty much.
You know.
How old is now? See, now I go down these rabbit holes. How old is Ringo?
He's 80-something.
83. Wow.
Nobody has the right to look that good at 83.
No, not at all. Wow. You know, I always felt that Ringo was underrated as a drummer. When he first took over in the Beatles, like people, I think, are right to say, his drumming was very basic, you know. But I think he really grew out in his career with the Beatles. I find him to be highly underrated.
I think you're right about that. And and he still gets some flack about his drumming ability. But, you know, if you listen to other drummers, he's always one of those drummers that they look to.
Yeah, you know, sure.
So who are you going to believe? Some anonymous twat on the internet or people who are actually drummers in successful bands? You know,
100%. Plus, say what you will, the guy was a fucking Beatle. You know,
yeah.
Like, I mean, you know, that's got to have some cachet.
And he seems like a generally fun person.
He does. Like those shows that I saw of his all-star band were very fun. I've never met him or anything, but he had always good banter with the audience and stuff. So yeah, they always were a lot of fun. He seems like a decent sort.
Well, I always remember that movie he made, Caveman.
Yes. Yes.
And
God, I haven't thought about that in years.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a great movie, but it's a lot of fun and there's some really good people in it.
Yeah, it's entertaining.
It's entertaining. I remember seeing that with my father when we were living back on Long Island. And I really enjoyed that movie. Yeah, you know, it's and that type of humor. I mean, I guess you might want to call it typically British, but for me, that just seems like the kind of humor and person that Ringo Starr embodies.
Agreed.
So I've always liked him ever since I saw Caveman.
Agreed.
All right, but getting back to Eric Carmen,
yes.
Another piece of our past chiseled away from the Statue of Time.
Wow. That was
philosophical. Poetic, wasn't it?
Wow. You would think you were like a writer or something.
Right. Even I surprise myself sometimes.
So before we get into our Oscar recap, as I posted on social media, I was at the Monster Mania convention this past
week.
And I met John Cleese.
Rub it the fuck in.
I met John Cleese, which was one of my, you know, one of my goals. I always wanted to meet him. He was super, super nice. And so let's see. Hold on. I'm just curious how old John is.
In his 80s as well.
Yes, 84. So, and you can tell, right? Like he, like the way he speaks and everything is now very soft and deliberate, but very funny, very engaging. Like I said in my post, I met him and I said, you know, it's funny. You don't look like a newt. And without missing a beat, he said, well, it got better. And I'm like, oh, my life is complete now. Like I shared a Monty Python moment with John Cleese, you know. But yeah, he was very nice, very funny, and very, you could tell he's one of those convention guests that genuinely enjoyed meeting the fans, you know. Spent time, a little time with everyone. Oh, what's your name? Where are you? You know, where are you from? You know, do you have a favorite sketch? When we did the photo op, oh my God, I was like, I can't believe I didn't think to bring anything because I have a limited edition rabbit, stuffed rabbit from Monty Python and the Holy Grail. I should have brought that. People had parrots. People had, one guy did the photo op. He had a full cosplay of the Black Knight.
Oh, wow.
Oh, man, it was so cool. Like, the photo ops were with people were so cool. One guy was dressed in a top hat and a suit from the and had a badge that said Ministry of Silly Walks.
Silly Walk.
Yeah. And when he walked in, like, he did, like, these high steps, you know? And it was hilarious. It was so much fun. So I now, over my lifetime, have met all the Pythons except for Terry Gilliam.
Yeah, and I don't think Terry does conventions.
Think so either. I've never seen any sort of a special thing or meet and greet or anything with him, you know, and I'd love to meet him, you know.
I would too.
Yeah, oh, I know you would.
Yeah, I give him a copy of my book.
Yeah, for sure. No, I know.
No, I'm happy for it. I saw that and I really was jealous about that because that would be one of my big things, would be able to meet him.
Yeah.
But I just haven't seen him appear at any of the conventions here. So
I don't think he travels much, and I was very surprised when they announced him. But the promoter, the agent that reps him for conventions reps several other people who were at the convention. So he probably said to Monster Mania, like, look, I can bring all these people. And John Cleese had one of the longest lines all weekend.
Oh, I have no doubt.
You know, because when are you going to meet John Cleese? Now, I did have an autograph from him. I had written him a letter like 15 years ago with a photo in it. And, you know, after like 6 months, I got it back, you know, from England with his signature on it. And I thought, well, that's the best I'm ever going to get. You know?
Yeah.
And then they announce he's going to be at Monster Mania. And that's the only reason I went, you know, was just for him because, I was going to write this up in a post, but I nobody fucking cares. But Scott, the prices are getting out of control, even more so than before. You know, the autograph, John Cleese's autograph was $80 and he wasn't doing table photo ops because he can't. So you had to do the pro photo op and that was $105. I coughed it up because for me, it was worth it.
Well,
go ahead.
I think given his status and his stature, and his contribution to not just comedy, but to entertainment, period. I think that's fairly reasonable. I thought it was going to be at least double that. I honestly did. And I was going to ask you what the price was on it, too, because I thought it was going to be a lot more, like $200 or $300, to be honest.
Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised when the tickets for the photo ops went on sale, because there are people who, in my mind, are not nearly as influential as John Cleese, who charge a lot more for their photo op. So now look, altogether, it cost me $185 plus my ticket to get into Monster Mania is over $200. That's not an insignificant amount of money.
No, for an not average at all.
Schmo like me, but it was worth every penny, but it was the only autograph that I got, you know, cause I said to myself, I'm going there to meet John Cleese and that's it. I said hello to some other celebrities, like when their tables were slow, I just walked up and said, oh, hey, what's up? A couple others, like I posted, and I'm not going to say it out loud because I don't want to cause problems for anybody, but there were a couple other table photo ops that I got because either I know the celebrity personally or I know their agent and they got me the hookup, you know, but I just can't afford it. And I'm not trying to, this is purely an example. I'm not calling her out or anything, but Katie Sagal was $90 to just to take a selfie with your phone at her table. To me, that's a little much for the privilege of sitting next to someone for 3 seconds and pressing a button on the phone, you know?
Yeah.
I understand they want to charge a little more for their autograph because they think you might sell it on eBay or something. But let's say I take a picture of myself with Katie Sagal. Who the fuck else wants that? You know what I mean? Like, that's just for me. So at some point, do we collectively as fans, we're going to have to say enough. But
yeah,
people were lined up, dude. And who am I to say at what people should spend their money on? You know what I mean? I just think that we as fans are feeding that beast.
Yeah, well, no, you know? Absolutely. And that's with everything. You know, the same people who complain about, oh, another sequel or another remake are still going to be in line and watch it. Even if it is to trash it afterwards, they're still giving their money to it.
Yeah,
you know?
100%. I have friends who criticize me. You know, it's so funny, the battle, this weird battle between sports fans and like Comic-Con fans or convention fans. They'll make fun of us. Sports fans will make fun of us. Oh, you go to these cons and you spend money for an autograph poster or whatever. And I'm like, all right, you spend $300 on a jersey with a guy's name on it who doesn't remotely give a fuck about you and you've never even met. You know, and you spend $500 for courtside tickets to a team that sucks.
Yeah.
At least I got enjoyment. I met like a hero of mine, a comedy legend, you know, got a picture with him and everything. And I have a memory now of that, you know? And so say what you will, make fun of me all day long, but you're no different. You know, if you go to a Buffalo Bills game and take your shirt off in sub-zero weather and paint your face blue, who's the nerd? You know, like, who's the weirdo?
Right.
So, all right, that's my spiel, but it was fun. The convention was fun. I saw a lot of friends that I haven't seen in a while. Did say hello. Michael Ironside was very nice. Michael Gross is always a blast. You know, I walked up I was and I'm like, hey, toss me the 8-gauge. And he's like, oh, it's great, you know?
I was going to mention Michael Ironside because you post a couple of pictures with him on Facebook and Instagram.
Yeah.
If you hadn't mentioned that it was Michael Ironside, never in a million years would I have guessed that's who it was.
Yeah, he puffed up a little bit.
Yeah. Well, not only that, but I thought he was a lot taller.
Yeah, me too. He's still got the voice, though. He's got that deep voice. And then we were taking the picture, and he's like, come on, you want to make an ass of yourself? I'm like, sign me up. And that's when we leaned over for our bald heads. He's like, I like your haircut, man.
That is great. When a celebrity can do that, you know they're one of the good guys.
Yeah, he was really nice to everybody online. you know, like just one of those friendly for someone who always plays a heavy, you know?
Yeah.
He just always plays like a bad guy or a badass. It's just one of the friendliest convention guests I've ever met. And everybody was saying that. They're like, oh, you got to meet Michael Ironside. He's so nice. You know, same thing with Michael Gross. Just super, super nice guy. While we were online, he told a lot of stories about making Tremors and that scene in Tremors where they're in the rec room, him and Reba, and the thing bursts through the wall. They only had one shot to do that because they only had the budget to build that fake wall one time. So they're like, well, this better go right because, you know. And so he told that story and then a couple other stories. And then I said to him, look, Tremors was great, but I just want to thank you for being part of my childhood. You know, you and Meredith and Michael J. Fox were part of our family, it seems like, you know, for like a decade. Mm-hmm. And he's like, well, it makes my heart feel warm to hear you say that, you know. And I said, there are some good sitcoms today. But I just don't think they have that same feel as like those 80s sitcoms, you know? Maybe it's just because I'm a product of that era.
Well, I think that might be a topic for another show.
Okay, fair enough.
I mean, I have a lot to say about that because I'm not necessarily a big fan. Yeah, make a note of that because I'm not necessarily a big fan of most of the 80s sitcoms.
Okay. Looking that'll be a good show then. Now.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
We don't often disagree, but I like it when we do. Mm-hmm. It makes for an interesting topic. Okay. And I think I have the perfect guest to line up to join that discussion.
Awesome.
So, all right. And so anyway, that was my trip to Monster Mania over the weekend. It was a lot of fun. Some great guests. Sam Raimi was there. He's another one who's really nice. Then again, everybody was really nice. Just a real quick note. Some people told me that I was off base, but John Lovitz looked like he didn't really want to be there. And someone told me that he was irritated because he was right near a door. And every time the door opened, he would get a blast of cold and he asked to be moved and they didn't move him and everything. So maybe he just was having a bad day, you know? But I didn't approach him because he looked a little unapproachable.
Well,
that was unfair.
But he always looks that way.
Maybe.
You know.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But other than that, it was fun.
Lovitz is an anti-vaxxer.
Is he?
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
That's when I lost any respect for him because he's got a podcast. And,
oh, okay.
I remember him talking about that.
Yeah, I don't really follow up on him or anything. I just saw that he was going to be there. I'm like, oh, John Lovitz, oh, that's pretty cool, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I probably would have gone up to say hello or something because I love The Critic.
Yeah, you know, me too.
I love the stuff that he did on Saturday Night Live, the characters that he did there. You know, the compulsive liar and the,
yes.
the guy in the office. Todd Todoroski. No, that was Rob Schneider.
That was Rob Schneider. Todd Todoroony, Todoroski.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So we saw the Oscars. We actually were able to stay up and watch the whole
thing. Yes. How about that?
And I missed the first hour or so because I didn't realize they had changed the fucking time on it.
Well, you're the only one who didn't realize it, so I don't know.
Yeah, well, I didn't pay much. To be honest, I didn't look to see what time it was going to be on until it had already been on. Because I assumed it was going to be on at five. You know, they do the red carpet stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Early. But here's something interesting. Now, I hear a lot of complaints about the Oscars because so-and-so got nominated and they didn't deserve it. Or so-and-so didn't get nominated and they deserved it, or what the fuck were they doing with the In Memoriam this year, that year, the other year? You hear a lot of that. Very rarely do I hear somebody complain about the red carpet interviews.
Oh my God.
And I did hear one. And their interview was, and their complaint was, they, you know, they were all such softball questions. And I'm like, who the fuck do you think is out there? Barbara Walters?
Right.
You know? A red carpet event is not the time for hardball interviews, you know? It's just reinforced the idea people will complain about anything.
I agree, man. I kind of had those on in the background, and I saw like Vanessa Hudgens and Julianne Hough were doing the interviews. So what do you expect? You know?
Yeah.
Of course, they're going to be, what are they going to say? Like, you look like shit. Who did your tux? You know, like, what are they going to say? Like,
right?
They're going to say, oh, you look beautiful. You know, whatever. Like, whose dress is that? You know? Yeah, man. It's, I don't know. Go ahead.
And I think that complaint came simply because this year's Oscars was one of the best I've seen in a very, very long time.
I agree with you. I enjoyed the telecast. And yet, of course, like there's other people that are bitching like it was dull and boring. And on one of the posts, a person who said that, and I'm like, do you remember when the Oscars used to do big musical numbers and comedy skits and stuff? They're like, yeah. And I'm like, well, everybody bitched about that.
Yeah.
So they changed the format, and now you're bitching that they don't have those elements anymore. So it just goes to show that it doesn't matter what they do, someone will bitch.
Yep.
So fuck it. I enjoyed the telecast. I do agree that I thought the In Memoriam was mishandled. I could have done without the dancers and without Andrea Bocelli and his son. Just show the graphics with a background track. That's it. It was way too busy. I do agree. I don't care that they missed this person or they didn't add this person. That happens every year. I just feel that it was a little busy. I do agree with that criticism.
Yeah, I could have done without the dancers. They didn't bother me to the extent that it did some other people. I liked Andrea Bocelli and his son. I love that song they sang. It really added some depth to that. And I think, you know, of course, I'm not privy to, you know, the Academy and when they decide things, obviously. But I think my opinion is that they thought that maybe just flashing the pictures behind the soundtrack was a little bit too static. And they wanted to add an extra element to give it a little bit extra oomph. And I, you know, they went overboard. I think if they just had Andrea Bocelli and his son, people wouldn't have complained nearly as much.
You're probably right about that. You're probably right.
What I thought was odd was at, you know, the very last few seconds when they had all those names listed, like it was the Vietnam Memorial, you know, but you couldn't read the names on it.
Yeah.
You know, and it went by so fast, even if you could, you certainly wouldn't have gotten all of them. And I think that was kind of a misstep. I know they want to get everybody that they can, but there's probably a better way to do that, I think.
Yeah, again, to me, it was sort of a minor nitpick. You know,
yeah.
I get what people are saying. The In Memoriam is supposed to be focused on the people who have passed. You know, I did enjoy when they had the former winners come out to give their testimonials.
Yep.
You know, because it's just, oh, yeah, me too. You know, and I thought some of them were really funny. You know, I thought Nicolas Cage was great. And so here's another complaint that I saw about those segments. Here it's just another example of Hollywood patting themselves on the back. And I'm like, but that's what all awards are. When, you know, whatever industry award there is, that's exactly what it is. It's peer recognition. I mean,
yeah. Duh.
And dude, that's what drove me crazy and prompted me to post what I posted the other day. All these indie filmmakers bitching about the Oscars, and meanwhile, they will splash all over the place. Oh, just won Best Director at the Middle of Nowhere Film Festival from Eastern Kentucky. I'm like, okay, yay. So how is that any different?
Well, exactly. And for every one of those stars that that came out, there were hundreds, if not thousands, of actors for each one of them who nobody knows. You know, people always just equate the Oscars with the millionaires and the well-known stars, and they forget, and I said this in a comment, they forget that there's over 10,000 people in the Academy.
Exactly.
You know, and who are they going to get? Some Joe Blow who just did a commercial and is going to be a waiter at the after party, you know?
Exactly.
Who the fuck would want to see that?
I personally know people who are voting members of the Academy that are never going to sniff the stage at the Oscars.
Yeah.
Because with all due respect, and I do not mean anything bad by this, when people tune into the Oscars, they want to see the big stars. Like when I saw Sally Field, I was like, Sally freaking Field, I haven't seen her in years. You know, I thought that was cool. I'm like, yes, this is why I watch the Oscars.
Yeah. And when I saw Forrest Whitaker, I'm like, holy shit, have they been keeping him in cryogenics until this very moment? Because I haven't seen him in years.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's what I like is, and people, this is my theory as to why like the Oscars sort of lost its luster over the years. And I think I posted about this. I can't remember. Before social media, before the internet, the only time we got to see what any of these people were up to was like at the Oscars or as an award show. And you'd be like, holy shit, look, George Burns, you know. Oh my God, you know, whoever, Betty Davis. Now, these people, every moment of their lives is splashed in front of our faces every minute. So when you see them, like you said, like a Forrest Whitaker, who's not really out there, it's a big deal to get to see him.
Yeah.
I remember, man, watching with my grandma and all her favorites. She'd be like, oh, Jimmy Stewart. Oh, I love Jimmy Stewart, you know, because it was a big deal. I don't know, man. I still like it. I thought most of the dresses were awesome. The men looked dapper, you know.
Yeah.
Some of the people, I'm like, who the fuck dressed you? You know. But then again, you and I are both fans of old Hollywood. I like glamour, you know.
I do too.
And I am convinced that Margot Robbie is not a real person.
She's real life Barbie.
One looks like that.
I was hoping when I saw Forrest Whitaker, I was really hoping he would talk about Paul Giamatti and make a lazy eye joke.
Yes. Oh, that would have been great.
That was a missed opportunity right there.
That would have been great. It was. It was.
And you know, Billie Eilish in her Catholic schoolgirl outfit.
Hey now. Hey now. Dude, that song is good. You know,
it is a good song. I like it.
Very good song. I do too. I thought when they performed I'm Just Ken, that was awesome. That was so good.
That was
fun.
It was fun. And all of the other nominations were a little bit, some aside from best song for Killers of the Flower Moon, which I thought was really very cool.
That was very cool. You know, very cool.
What I like about Billie Eilish is she doesn't have your typical singing voice.
No.
I mean, she doesn't sound like anybody else out there right now. She sounds like herself.
And people forget, like, I just think the way she comes across, she's not pretentious. I just like her and her brother, you know. People forget she's only 22 years old, you know.
Yeah. So
when she acts, you know, when she giggles or when she acts completely, like, surprised or overwhelmed, I think it's all genuine, you know.
Oh, I have no doubt about that.
She doesn't know what to say, or she's like, oh, my God, I'm so overwhelmed. Like, I believe it. You know?
Yeah, no, I do too. She's the youngest person to ever win two Oscars.
Dude, that's just crazy.
Isn't it?
That's just crazy.
Yeah. And speaking of being overwhelmed, Emma Stone was a bit verklempt when
yes.
she won.
Yes. Well, plus the whole back of her dress split open, you know.
Yeah. When she was dancing to It's Ken.
Yes. Yep. He's like, oh, my dress. So speaking of that, I don't know if you heard about this, but in the never-ending quest for people to be offended, I don't know if you heard about this. I heard about it today. If you noticed, which I didn't at the time, when Emma Stone came up to receive her Oscar, Michelle Yeoh handed the Oscar to Jennifer Lawrence, who then handed it to Emma Stone. People immediately jumped on that and said, yet another example of racism. Why couldn't Michelle Yeoh hand the statue directly to Emma Stone? Why did it have to go to a white girl first?
Oh, dude, I hadn't heard that one.
I never even noticed it. And this is where I wish we would stop giving these fringe Yahoo's the time of day. Michelle Yeoh heard about that and she addressed it. She said, people need to stop with this nonsense. Here's why I did that. Jennifer Lawrence and Emma Stone are real life best friends. They are the BFFs. I thought it would be cool for Jennifer Lawrence, who happened to be on stage, to be able to hand the Oscar statue to her best friend.
Yeah.
That's it. That's why I did it. And I'm like, there you go. Can everyone just shut the fuck up now?
Yeah. No, and they won't, because they'll say, well, that's just an excuse. You know, she's just covering up.
Dude, it's just amazing. They said the same thing that they accused Robert Downey Jr. of racism because he didn't acknowledge, I get his name wrong, the guy, Ki-Hai Kwan, who won Best Supporting Actor last year. Like, when he handed the statue to Robert Downey Jr., Robert didn't seem to really acknowledge him in any way. And I'm like, what is he supposed to do? Get on his knees and blow him on stage? Like, I don't understand. Like, he took the, like, it's an overwhelming moment, you know? Well, he shook hands with Nicolas Cage. Like, what? So what? Like, I can't believe that people are just nitpicking through this shit, trying to prove that everyone is somehow racist. You know, I just don't get it. And of course, it's all white people claiming it.
Yeah.
You know, Ki-Hai Kwan didn't say a word about it. He didn't come out and say, well, that was weird. Robert Downey Jr. barely looked at me when I handed him his statue. Like, dude, I just can't anymore with this bullshit.
Right. And keeping with Robert Downey Jr., lots of people complained about Jimmy Kimmel's joke about, you know, his little roasting of Robert Downey Jr., the comment he made that this was a high point of Robert Downey Jr.'s career. Well, one of the highest.
Right. You know,
I thought that was funny, you know. And I don't know that Robert Downey Jr. has said anything since the Oscars about the jokes. But, I mean, I don't know. It seems to me like he can take a joke. I mean, he's a very funny guy.
I don't know in this case, But I do know that he has said in the past that he uses humor as a coping mechanism about his troubled past. So he makes a lot of self-deprecating jokes about it. So I highly doubt that it bothered him at all. You know? Yeah. So it, what is he going to do? Like, it happened. It's everybody knows about his past. So I guess at some point you got to just embrace it. and say, well, here we are.
Because I loved what he said in his acceptance speech. You know, I want to thank my troubled childhood first and the Academy second.
Yeah, and it's so weird. We as a society, we love to knock people off a pedestal, but then we love a comeback story.
Yeah.
So like Robert Downey Jr. is now a massive global star, and we remember stories about him waking up in strangers' houses because he didn't know where he was, you know, because he was doing heroin. Good for him, man.
you know?
But speaking of the Oscars, we don't want to neglect the most important aspect. And that is, how did we do on our predictions?
Yes, how did we do?
So I will run this down. So Scott, on your prediction column, you had best actor, best supporting actor, best supporting actress, cinematography, direction, music, original score, music, original song, sound, and best picture. Total of 9. In your personal choice, you had also supporting actor, supporting actress, original song, production design, sound, adapted screenplay, for a total of 6. For my predictions, I had supporting actor, supporting actress, cinematography, we had the same, Oppenheimer. Direction, we had the same, Oppenheimer. Editing, I went with Oppenheimer, and I had that one. You picked Poor Things. For original score, I whiffed. I had Killers of the Flower Moon. Original song, we both had Billie Eilish. Production design, Poor Things, I had. Visual effects, I got with Godzilla. And then Best Picture, we both had Oppenheimer. So we tied in our predictions with 9. Which is pretty good because we had, let's see, 17 categories. So we had a little over 50% success rate.
Yeah.
And then in personal choice, good for us. It is. In personal choice, I edged you out. I had 8.
Yeah.
But that's really more just for fun. It's the prediction column that really counts. And that's where we were tied.
And full disclosure, for best song, we did not record that on our Oscars show. We had forgotten about that somehow. And we both picked it not too long before they picked best song.
So that was a bit of a cheat, you know. So even if we removed that one, we still tied at 8.
Yeah.
Because we both said, it's going to be Billie Eilish. So.
Yeah.
So for the winners, there was really nothing where I was like, wow, really? The one that did surprise me was in animated feature. I thought Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse really was going to win because that's the kind of movie that the Academy likes to give that award to. So when The Boy and the Heron won, I applauded it because I'm a big Studio Ghibli and Miyazaki fan, but I was definitely surprised, you know?
Yeah.
Costume design, dude, I thought for sure either Napoleon or Barbie would win. And it was Poor Things.
Yeah.
Other than that, nothing really surprised me. Although maybe original screenplay for Anatomy of a Fall was the winner. Neither you nor I, you predicted Past Lives and I predicted The Holdovers. So again, I'm not upset about it, but I was a little bit surprised.
Well, and yeah. I was very surprised at Best Actress for Emma Stone. Not that I didn't think she deserved it, but I really, I mean, I was pulling for Lily Gladstone, but I'm happy Emma Stone won it because while I still think Lily Gladstone gave a better performance, I think Emma Stone's performance was much more difficult. And because you believe that she's this, you know, woman brought back to life with the brain of an infant, she does that so incredibly well at the beginning of the movie, just from her speech patterns to the way that she talks, her movements, her reasoning, her lack of filter. She encapsulates that role. So I get why she won that. And
agree.
I can't be angry about that. My favorite moment, absolutely my favorite moment from any Oscar telecast over the last decade or so, was seeing Schwarzenegger and DeVito again.
Yes.
And talking about, well, how did Batman kill you? And then seeing Michael Keaton in the audience, who was desperately trying to hold back a smile.
Yep, that was great. That was a great moment.
That is a classic moment.
Yep. Just back to Lily Gladstone for a second. I read an interesting article. I think it was in Variety. It might have been Hollywood Reporter, that said she should have campaigned in Best Actress in a Supporting Role, because as a percentage of screen time in a 3-hour movie, a 3-hour and 20-minute movie, she really doesn't. She only had 8 minutes more screen time in the movie than Robert De Niro did. And he was nominated in a supporting role. So they're saying that as much as everyone predicted, like, she would win, if she had campaigned for herself in actress in a supporting role, she almost would have certainly won over Divine Joy Randolph. As deserving as she was to win it, that's where Lily Gladstone should have campaigned. And I never even thought about that.
No, you know, I never thought about that either.
She's definitely the lead actress in your mind in Killers of the Flower Moon. And then I did a little more research and it's the actor that gets to decide, like, where they want to throw their hat into the ring, like, as far as what category they want to be considered for. I didn't know that.
Oh, I didn't know that either.
Yeah, I learned that, you know, that, yeah, like, and like for Best Director, they need to, you know, that's that they also need to say, yes, I want to be considered. But yeah, and then, you know, and I guess there are some rules, like, if you're in a 2-hour movie and you're in it for 7 minutes, you can't submit yourself for a leading role. You know what I mean?
Right.
But so, yeah, I mean, I agree with exactly what you just said. And of course, here come all the complaints, mostly from white people. Here we go again. Oscar's so white, you know, Emma Stone. And I'm just like, when will people be satisfied? Do we need an Oscars where everyone who's nominated is a person of color? Are we going to get to a point where we just shouldn't even nominate white people anymore, regardless of how good the performance is? Are we getting to that point?
Well, you know, and they have the BET Awards that now that recognize actors and actresses, you know, and you don't hear white people bitching about that.
Well, remember, Scott, you can only be racist. You can't be racist against white people.
Yeah,
sure, you know. Sure. But I did see the complaints and I'm like, well, here we go again, you know. Meanwhile, like, you have all this, I just can't, don't even want to talk about it anymore because there's no solution to it. There just isn't.
No,
you know,
no. People are going to people.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, like you said, like, it wasn't like Emma Stone, people are scratching their heads. Like, how could she possibly have won an award for that performance? You know?
Yeah. It's like, did you even see the movie?
Right. Right.
Yeah. I don't get it. But it was a good year. I like Jimmy Kimmel as a host. He's a bit smarmy, but I like him.
Dude, you know who I think they should offer it to next year?
Ricky Gervais.
Well, yeah, but John Mulaney.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
I think he would be good. He's a little younger, a little hipper than Jimmy Kimmel. I like his delivery. I liked his whole rabbit hole that he went down about Field of Dreams.
Yeah.
You know, I thought that was funny. I think he'd be a good host.
I think so, too. He'd be a great host.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not like you have to actually be an actor to host that. I mean, because Jimmy Kimmel certainly wasn't.
Yeah.
Isn't. You know, he's just a TV talk show host. If anything, he should be hosting the Emmys.
Right.
Although he may have done that. I don't know.
Couldn't tell you.
But I would love to see Ricky Gervais do the Oscars. Because if he did the Oscars the way he did the Golden Globes.
Oh, my God.
Hollywood would burn to the ground.
It would. It would. You know, and the politics was kept to a minimum. People, of course, called out Jimmy Kimmel when he read the tweet from Donald Trump, you know. But
that was
I'm
a
like,
great line, though.
It was. It was great. And I'm like, he didn't start it. Trump thought it was a good idea to comment live and bitch about Jimmy Kimmel. So he decided to run with it, you know, and make a joke out of it. I thought it was funny.
I thought it was funny, too.
And sorry, isn't it past your jail time? Like, oh, I laughed out loud when he said that.
Yeah.
I was like, that was good.
Yeah.
Yeah, now that was good. There was very little. Like, of course, I don't begrudge the Ukrainian guy from commenting about Ukraine, you know.
No, not at all.
So, you know, but it was kind of to a respectful minimum, I thought. There wasn't a lot of constant political or anything. The speeches were really about the art and everything. So I thought that was good. That was good.
Yeah. And so. I think that's kind of what made it enjoyable. Well, I don't mind the political speeches that they make sometimes. It was just nice not having that in the atmosphere for a change and just concentrating and celebrating what it was. And I loved seeing all of the old clips and everything.
Yes. Yes.
And the really quickly, and I mentioned this in a comment to you, was it Ryan Gosling who was nominated for Best Supporting Actor?
Yes, yes.
And he got to introduce film clips.
Oh, about the stunt, the stunts category. Yeah.
Yeah. Here you are nominated for a Best Supporting Actor role, and everybody else is giving out awards, and you introduce film clips.
Yeah.
I'd be rather salty about that.
Yeah, that was, yeah, I agree. And they definitely need, I know they're adding next year achievement in casting as an award. And I really think they need to add stunt, you know. And someone said, well, how could you do it? Because there's a ton of stunt people that work on a movie. And I said, well, best picture, sometimes there's like 11 people on stage because that you have that many producers. So who cares? Yeah. Or you could say, well, the Oscar goes to the stunt supervisor or whatever. There's always a way. Don't look for an excuse. Like, there's always a way to do it.
or even have like a special award in movies for stunts and call it the Hal Needham Award.
Yeah. Yeah, or when they give the award for, like, so Godzilla Minus One won an award for best visual effects. Do you know how many visual effects people work on a movie?
Oh, exactly.
Sometimes there's 100, you know? So, yeah, that's just, that to me is just an excuse. You know, I'm sure they can figure it out.
Yeah, I'm sure that they can, but will they?
Yeah. Well.
All right.
Anyway, there we are, Scott. We're at the end of our hour. And we filled it up as usual.
And very quickly, I'll talk more in depth about this next week, I think. But I've been watching the second season of Feud. It's Capote and the Swans.
Oh, yes.
And it is fucking brilliant. When I saw the actor, Hollander, I can't remember what his first name is, was cast as Truman Capote, I thought, oh, that might not be a good choice, but he is amazing. There is a scene last night where he's talking with James Baldwin. And it's set up to look realistic, but then you realize it was probably just like a hallucination. But James Baldwin is trying to get Capote sober, and they're in a bar and they're talking about the Swans, which are these very rich and very famous women who have fallen in love with Truman Capote, and then he backstabs them and they try and get revenge. And James Baldwin says to Capote, "Criticism only hurts if you believe it." And that dropped on me like a ton of bricks. It was like a revelation for some reason. And I know I've heard that before somehow, but it was the way it was phrased and specifically the way that the line was delivered. And it just, it's an amazing, amazing show. The acting in it is brilliant. It's got Demi Moore, Chloe Sevigny, the woman, oh God, what's her face? Lisa Flockhart, Demi Moore. I was about to say Bruce Willis's ex-wife, but Demi Moore is in it. Fantastic cast, and the acting is just absolutely brilliant. I haven't watched all of it. The last episode just came out last night. I'm up through I watched the first five, and it just really is one of those, it's a masterpiece in acting from everybody, and it really, more people need to see this and talk about it, because it's absolutely fascinating.
Huh. I would like to say that I will check it out, but I can't promise that.
I know. All right, so what have you got going on, Todd?
Well, same as always, the Theater of Terror and Return to the Theater of Terror are now both streaming on Tubi and wherever else you get your streaming services, so check those out. And if you do, please go to IMDb and give us a quick rating and a quick review. It really helps boost our visibility. If you watch it on Amazon, please do the same. It only takes a minute, and I'm going to call everybody out. No one has a problem reviewing the latest big Hollywood blockbuster for a studio that does not need your help. We indie folks need your help.
Yep.
So please, if you watch on Amazon, please give us a rating and a brief review. It helps push us to the front when people are looking for movies to watch or whatever. It really does help us out. So please do that. And if you are a filmmaker, submissions are definitely open for Grindhouse Nights Film Festival. Just search for us on Film Freeway. Go ahead and send us your creepy horror and exploitation films. It's already the middle of March. I can't believe it. So
what, when is the deadline?
Hell if I know. but it's not for a while. It's not until like July or August.
Oh, that's what I thought.
So, okay. Yeah.
All right.
What are you doing?
Tree of Everlasting Sorrow will be out April 1st. I made the very, very last change in the book last night. Because being a writer, you just can't help but go through everything all the time and say, well, I can change this and make this a little bit better. So I decided after I made the last change last night that that was it. So now it's just a process of formatting it, putting in your foreword and getting it ready for publication. And I believe it is going to be the first book of mine that will have a hardcover. Now, the ebook and the paperback will be out first. The hardcover is going to take a little bit longer. But I plan to have that out within, you know, a month and a half or so. It just takes time because there's a whole different formatting process and I have to get an actual page count and set file for to get a hardcover book jacket made. So look forward to that on April 1st. And of course, until then, you can get my other books wherever ebooks are sold, and you can get the physical copies at Amazon.com. And you can always get the audiobooks at Audible.com.
And folks, before we sign off, I will just say, if you're like me and you're often pressed for time and you're not going to be able to sit and read a book, you owe it to yourself to listen to Scott's books on Audible. He hit the jackpot with the narrators of his books. I can vouch for that. I listened to all of them and they are fantastic. So,
and I'm looking forward to seeing who I can finagle into recording The Tree of Everlasting Sorrow.
Awesome.
And real quick, one last thing. Somebody made a comment on my Threads post. Yes, I'm on Threads. When I posted the link for the Oscar show, and I'm paraphrasing it a bit, he said, it seems like we would agree on a lot, but man, this is torture to get through.
A chore to listen to.
and I'm like, well, how do you think I feel recording it?
And I wanted to pull a Jack Sparrow and say, but you did listen.
If you're listening again, well, it's your own fault now.
Yes. But we thank you for doing so.
Exactly. And until next time, may all of your journeys be filled with pure imagination.